Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio. We've got Michael Tellinger on the show today. And for those of you who are not aware of Michael's work, I would start getting aware of it right away because he's been doing some amazing research on Adam's calendar, on the landing pad of Enki and Enlil, the Anunnaki, and you know, it's rewriting history as we speak. So it's just amazing. And he's got so much information here. I don't want to go on too long. I just want to bring him straight on the show. So, Michael, are you with us?
Hi, James. Lovely to be speaking to you. We're currently in Dallas on our USA tour, waiting very excitedly to make our way up to your ranch.
Yeah. I guess June 24th, you'll be up here doing an event. And for those people that want to find out more about that, just go ahead, type in eSETI events. At gmail.com, and then that'll give you the information, or just go to eseti.org if you want to find out the information and send us an email, because it's not up on the site. So be sure and check into that. But that's going to be an amazing event. We've got you, we've got Bob Dean, the list goes on and on, just some amazing speakers, and it's you know, the information that's going to come through is just going to be amazing.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be visiting you again and sharing some of your own research on the amazing work that you guys have been doing there, and just to meet Bob Dean again. It's great stuff. It seems like I'm definitely sensing like a great convergence of open minds and messengers of a variety of positive information that are converging and getting together to. Mm-hmm. To collectively share this information with the others that are looking for it, and it's very exciting.
Yeah, it definitely seems to all tie in together. And what I've seen over and over, like, everybody has a piece of the puzzle. And when all the pieces come together, then we're going to really know what's going on. And some of us are going to have to let go of some things here and there that were mistruths or disinformation or you know, the old paradigm of the past, you know, as this new information comes in. And I'm hoping, you know, people will just set aside their egos and listen to the information and the data and then make a determination from there.
Yeah, absolutely. As long as everybody just listens to me all the time, you know.
There you go. Well, you have more of the truth than most people. So, you know, I would love to hear, is there anything new concerning your research there with Adam's calendar or the, you know, the, is it, were you calling it Enki's place or Enlil's? I guess they're together, so it didn't matter.
Yeah, well, I'm starting to call Adam's calendar more and more now Enki's calendar, because there's overwhelming evidence and suggestion that it was a site that was erected and constructed by Enki in among the millions of gold mines and the millions of stone circle ruins. The huge gold mining operation in Southern Africa, which is in South Africa and Zimbabwe predominantly, but also stretches over into Botswana and Mozambique. That's where the highest concentration of it is. It's directly linked to the Great Zimbabwe Ruins as well, which seems to be Enki's headquarters down in this ancient, or the original settlement on Earth of humanoids or our early ancestors that were the slaves in these first gold mines and the gold mining operation down there. Mm-hmm. And so the latest information is just really just small, more and more pieces of the puzzle that I'm able to pull in and that strengthen the argument from various ways and some very interesting, unexpected things. And these happen all the time, as you know, in this journey that we are on individually and collectively. One of the interesting ones, I must say, is my girlfriend Daryl and I just recently went up to Zimbabwe to go and explore the Zimbabwe ruins, and also to Bulawayo in Zimbabwe to look at the Kami ruins. And there are more than 250 recognized sites in Zimbabwe of ancient ruins. Just to give you an idea of how well recognized these sites are in Zimbabwe, but nobody knows about this. It's only when you talk to the tour guides and to the people on the ground, and you start looking at the local maps, that you start seeing these sites that have actually been pinpointed on the maps and recognized, and that alone tells you that there's a vast ancient community and civilization that lived there, and they're always inextricably linked to the mining and the production of gold. That's the first thing that comes out. But one of the things that struck me on our trip there recently was, and we did that trip just before we came to the United States so that I could speak about this from a personal experience and not just, you know, secondhand information. What struck me is this fascination with the baobab trees, these spectacular trees that the Bushman people of South Africa call the upside-down trees, that God planted these trees upside down.
And
they're just spectacular, big, fat trees. I think the world record for a tree is held by a baobab tree, where the circumference of the tree is, I think, 47 meters or something like that.
Wow.
What is that? That's about, let's say, 150 feet.
Yeah.
That's
the
circumference of a tree. Just imagine a tree with a girth that size. It's huge.
Yeah, it's almost unimaginable. I've never seen. I mean, we have some pines here, some very ancient pines that they've preserved that are pretty massive, and I would say maybe, you know, maybe 12 foot to 16 foot, you know, at the most. But that's just massive to think of that.
So I was just fascinated, and I find an unresistible or irresistible attraction towards these baobab trees. It's as if I have some sort of a soul connection with them. It's very strange. And these trees are said to be very old, but nobody has really gone out there and done conclusive scientific studies of how old some of these trees are. It's just commonly said that they, you know, the oldest baobab trees may be as old as, you know, 3,000 or 5,000 years old. Well, I've reached a different conclusion from some observations that I've made, and I'm beginning to believe totally, and it resonates with every cell in my body, that we're looking at these trees that were some of the first plants that grew after the Great Flood some 12,000, 13,000 years ago. And I think that some of these oldest trees go back to just after the flood, about 12,000 or more years ago. Mm-hmm. And that's spectacular, because some of these trees are growing out of the walls of some of these stone ruins. Mm-hmm. So as an indicator of the age of some of these stone walls, that becomes a very important element to take into consideration, or a piece of the puzzle.
Now, what's the latest, I guess, date for some of these sites that you've come up with as far as their origins?
Well, the date that I've got and I'm working around is 285,000 years. Mm-hmm. The earliest, Adam's calendar or Enki's calendar. Mm-hmm. And there are various reasons I say that. James, the fascinating thing is that the more you scratch and little you find, as you know, you find a piece of the puzzle here and another piece over there. Individually, when you find the pieces of the puzzle and the clues, that's what I'm referring to as pieces of the puzzle, the clues for the age and origin of these sites, when you first find these clues, you don't know what they mean or what they relate to, but you just know that it's significant and that you need to hold on to that until a later date. And this is what happens. The more you work on this mystery, and I often call it like an ancient crime scene, and the work we're doing is like the guys in CSI. We have to come and, you know, analyze the ancient crime scene and find the pieces of the puzzle and the clues and the evidence and string them together into a coherent storyline that makes some sort of sense. And slowly but surely, the more you work on it, the more your eyes open, the more you start to understand certain aspects, the easier it becomes to slot the pieces of the clues and the puzzle pieces into the bigger picture. And it's very exciting, because suddenly things that didn't make any sense to you 2 years ago become so obvious and so in your face now, you know. And
I was curious, did you hear about the May 21st Rapture Day?
Oh, yeah.
Like
well,
the billboards everywhere.
Well, I mean, obviously, so now you know that you're a part of the sinners that have been left behind.
You stole my line. That's what I was
Sorry.
All right. I was just going to say, you know, we all know the Earth is only 6,000 years, and we're, you know, we're all supposed to be gone by now unless we're wretched sinners. But
yeah, so at least you and I know, and we have one thing in common, that we're these horrible low-life sinners that deserve to burn in hell for eternity.
Yeah, sounds like a loving God to me.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I've always, my research has, and going through all the scriptures and everything else, you know, when people say that, they ask you, do you believe in God? And I always say, which God? You know, I said, you know, you have the Anunnaki God, the Egyptian gods, the Greek gods, the you know, Hindu gods, you know, the Jewish God, the Christian God, you know, I always like, which one should I believe in, or do you think I don't believe in, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just amazing because, and all this research has shown us that, you know, when you look in any of the sacred books or the ancient books or the archaeological sites, you can see that beings have come and gone for thousands and thousands of years, and they were very advanced beings, had extreme technology.
Yeah, and the technology often was not necessarily in the physical form, but in the spiritual form, in the ability to interact and react to the laws of nature that are presented to us by the world around us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you know, just basically dematerializing and rematerializing in different places. Doesn't necessarily mean you need a spaceship to do that. You can
do that in
your own body, and the energy fields around your own body and that come out of your body and all that kind of stuff. So I think part of the enlightenment and the growth of consciousness is to start to understand this kind of stuff, and that brings in another interesting prospect, and that is, well, if these UFOs that we are seeing and witnessing are physical craft, how advanced are these beings that are visiting us in their UFOs? They may not be as advanced as we think they are, mm-hmm. because they're still using physical, you know, spacecraft to travel through space-time.
Exactly. I know the beings that we've been photographing here don't need a ship. They just appear. And
yeah.
And we have several monks you know, different people that have come here and actually seen them and photographed, you know, people like Mary and Kuan Yin and these 14-foot-tall feline beings. They're all sixth and seventh, you know, fifth-dimensional beings popping in and out, and they don't really need a craft. But we do have the other ones. You know, it seems like the whole enchilada is happening here. We have metallic craft that are just outside of visible light that are picked up by the cameras, and then we have energy ships, light ships, and ships that are just pure consciousness, or Merkabas.
Yeah, that's this is the part of the important message that we need to absorb and digest. These different levels and frequencies of beings out there, and not everyone's at the same level.
Yeah, I noticed that a lot of what I run into a lot, and I'll do a disclaimer right away. And that, you know, a lot of scientists want, you know, to put it in their test tube or measure it or document it and have it repeatable and everything else. And they want you to prove a non-physical event through physical means, which is a bit crazy when you think about it. And, you know, they know there's at least 11 dimensions out there. Some are on to 26 dimensions. And this little third dimension with the life on it is such a small piece of the puzzle. It's less than 1% of the universe that we are aware of now. But I find it ironic that, and I'm sure you run into these guys over and over, that keep trying to stuff all this evidence into their little box. And their box can't even hold this mountain of evidence, but they just keep trying to disqualify everything that doesn't fit into their little box.
Yeah. Well, you know, while you're on that subject, it's important to remind people that science doesn't have everything figured out. In fact, science has very little figured out, and and that scientists can explain very little, if anything, about the nature of reality and the universe and the laws of nature and all that. And the more you get stuck in the mainstream academic paradigms of science and physics, the more trouble and difficulty you're going to have to understanding the laws of nature and the nature of reality and how it all works together, because the formulas that we get taught at school and at university in physics and chemistry and all that are fundamentally flawed, because they do not incorporate the laws and the ratios of the laws of nature. And this is one of the important things. You know, you asked me what new information have we got. Most of the new information, well, I've got a lot more new information in terms of scientific research and measurements and so forth that we can talk about as well. But the other important thing is the work that I've been doing with Willem de Swart on what we call the secret numbers of God, which are just becoming such a mind-blowing, overwhelming body of information and evidence of the numeric grid and how it's all held together with numbers and the ratios between the numbers and the numeric values, that in turn can be used to describe and define sacred geometry and why sacred geometry is the way that it is. And it's just spectacular. And everything supports everything else. There's nothing out of sync or out of kilt anywhere. If it doesn't fit into this model, then something is wrong and you need to go back and reevaluate, and eventually you'll find, oh, okay, I missed this. This is how it fits, because that's the simplest solution. And in a way, it comes back to Occam's razor, you know, the scientific principle, Occam's razor. It says if you're confronted by a problem that has a number of possible answers or solutions, it's the simplest of the bunch that is normally the accurate one. Mm-hmm. And that's where it comes down to. It's interesting to see. One of my favorite physicists is very quickly becoming a guy called Paul Dirac, who in 1933 won a Nobel Prize in the quantum physics area, together with Edwin Schrödinger, who is a lot more famous than Paul Dirac. But Paul Dirac made some very interesting statements, and then after he won the Nobel Prize, at a very early age, I think he might have been in his late 20s or early 30s when he won the Nobel Prize. So he was a youngster, man, and a great thinker. And he was one of the guys that started saying that all the matter in the universe comes out of the source of light.
Oh, yeah.
Now, don't you think that that's an important bit of information to share with the students in physics and chemistry and science classes?
Yeah, one would think so. I know a lot of the Nobel Prize winners, if you look at their theories and what they won their Nobel Prizes on, a lot of it goes back to Vedic knowledge, and it's in all the Vedic scriptures, you know, and some found out that bacteria are more prolific during, you know, moon cycles and this and that, and you should give this medicine this time, and, you know, it's Ayurvedic medicine, but they give them Nobel Prizes for just repeating it in English.
Yeah.
The same thing with you know, the vibrational continuum, that everything begins in consciousness, goes into light, then energy, and then mass. Well, they've gotten to the light part, you know, of it, but it actually goes beyond that into consciousness as far as the origin of everything.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's fascinating, because, you know, the more work and the more research I do with Willem, on Willem de Swart on the secret numbers of God, it all comes back to all the stuff that you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful when you see someone like Willem, who I don't know what's happening to him, but he's being channeled by some serious, serious major knowledge and information. Just comes downloaded in these giant waves of information.
Oh, yeah.
And then he just comes out with the stuff, and it all fits and allows us to understand stuff so much more simpler, and so it's so easy to understand. Mm-hmm. And then you have I have these wonderful discussions with some of my friends. One of them is the most sort of decorated academic in South Africa. He's a professor he's got four PhDs in chemistry, physics, applied mathematics, and now law, believe it or not. Uh-huh. And, yeah, and I have these great lengthy discussions with, his name is Peter Wagner, and you know, he's still, although he's highly psychic, which he keeps very secret and quiet to himself, because it's, you know, it's not a good thing being a lecturer and a professor at a university and going around telling people that you're, you know, a highly psychic individual.
Oh yeah, they don't last long.
Yeah, so he shares stuff with me that he doesn't share with too many other people. But yeah, you know, I was just when I was on my way to the airport to come to the USA, I had a long chat with him in the car while I was driving, and we got onto his new paper that he's written on anti gravity and how anti gravity. He tells me that he's finally got the formula figured out for anti gravity, and it's something that he already figured out in the 70s and early 80s, but nobody wanted to publish his paper. None of the mainstream peer review, you know, magazines. And this, he's still stuck in that paradigm. And peer review magazines. And until it's published in a peer review magazine, he can't publish it anywhere else, because then they'll all snub him and ignore him.
Uh-huh.
It's just this weird cycle of craziness, man, with these mainstream academics. They just keep tripping themselves up.
Yeah, I see that constantly in you know, when you talk them off the record, I've hung out with some physicists with quite a few degrees, and you talk to them off the record, and boy, they're just a wealth of knowledge. They have all this information, and you say, "Hey, can I quote you? Will you come on the air and talk about it?" And they said, "No way."
Yeah, that's exactly. So I was having this chat with Peter Wagner, and he was telling me about his new formula. Well, it's an old formula, but he's finally, you know, he's submitted it to a whole bunch of peer review magazines, and he's not sure if they're going to publish it, and he's highly irritated about that, and he says, this is the thing that we've all been waiting for, and but I can't tell you about it until it's been published. And I just go, listen, Peter, just put it out there. Stop doing this. Just put it out there and screw these people. They will be forced to follow you once the other individual scientists, independent scientists, have taken your work and taken it to the next level. And then he started explaining his formula to me and so forth, and I just said, and I could just sense that he was formulating himself into a corner there.
Yeah.
It was just a typical kind of physics formulas that they throw at you at school and at university, and I'd said to him, just please be aware of one thing, and he is very familiar with Willem's work and Willem de Swart's, you know, Secret Numbers of God, which does not work at all with any mainstream formulas. It works with the sacred geometry ratios and the ratios in the numeric differences between, and strangely enough, believe it or not, that all those ratios come out of the tarot cards. They're all very well encoded in the tarot cards.
Wow.
And Willem has decoded this, all this stuff, and they come out of the ratios of, like, you know, the first card's number is 0, the second card's number is 1. And those seem to be the sacred ratios,
mm-hmm.
And out of those ratios comes all the universal information and knowledge that Willem has been uncovering. It's spectacular. So
I know when this information comes out, then, you know, it's already happening though. But all this fieldless energy technology, you know, anti gravity. I know what might spur your friend on to publish his papers. Tell him that I already know what counter gravity is and see what he says.
Yeah, exactly.
But basically, you know, the anti-gravity is fine. You just float things around. But counter-gravity propels things about 7,000 miles an hour. And that's where you want to go with that technology. And I actually know people that have it but can't get it out right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's not – there. It's nothing really hidden. It's a lot of that's already out there. It's just nobody's publishing it.
Yeah. So – anyway, it's interesting stuff. When, as you said, when you talk to these scientists, and a lot of people, you know, that are new to this area of information and research, are still coming out of the old paradigm and out of the old schooling and education system, and they still think, well, I'm a well-educated guy, and you know, I've got a high school and a college degree, and I've got a master's in this and that, and only once you realize that that you've just mastered yourself into a corner with disinformation and rubbish that they want to fill our heads with, so that it takes the rest of your life to get that information out of your head and realize that the truth lies way beyond, outside of those boundaries.
We call it recycled ignorance here.
Yeah.
Just keep recycling it over and over again, and they don't allow anything else because, you know, the professors have written their books and they don't want to go back and change the information when the new information, you know, contradicts it. So it just keeps recycling over and over again.
Yeah. Well, that's the interesting thing. You know, how do you get your PhD? You're not going to get your PhD if you write a paper on something completely new and you have no references to other papers that have been logged as accepted peer-reviewed papers. So think about this. How do you ever make any progress?
Yeah,
it's virtually impossible because you keep running around in circles with the same group of academics that keep running around patting each other on the back and inflating their own egos, never making any real progress because it's very difficult to break through and present something brand new and completely out of the box unless you can quote and reference other papers that have been accepted by the mainstream academia. That's an insane situation. What kind of a progressive education system is that? It's not. It's completely the opposite.
Well, I know that I knew people that were working on their PhDs or masters or whatever, and they wanted to write a paper on, you know, countergravity or antigravity or things of that nature, and they were told straight up, forget it. I will fail you. If you try to write a paper on antigravity, I will fail you. It will not be accepted. And, I thought that was quite interesting where major universities are saying, if you do write this, you're out, you know, you're out of the system, basically.
Yeah. So in essence, what has happened, and this is my take on it, is that the real great minds and the great thinkers operate outside of the established academic hallways.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know Japan came up with a car that just runs on straight water. And I know several people now that have systems that they're, you know, splitting water and creating hydrogen and oxygen. And they're having on-demand success where they're running 100% on water. And that is coming out through garages and small labs all over the country right now. I don't think there's any way they could stop it, although they've been trying. So we're not too far out from actually running our vehicles on water, but I would say take it to the next step and get in the zero point of the fuelless energy. Then you don't need tires, you know, because that's going to push you into countergravity or anti-gravity. And it'd be nice to take the next step and just skip the in-between.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. One of my main obsessions at the moment is finding the sound frequency because all of my work at the moment revolves around sound and using sound as a source of energy because that's what clearly is coming out of these ancient structures and the civilizations in Southern Africa.
Now, have you heard the caves in Tibet? Have you gotten the sound from them?
The caves in Tibet.
Yeah, they have these deep caves, and I guess they're in Tibet, and they actually invited Russian scientists to come and measure these sound frequencies. And it's just it's amazing the frequencies coming out. The earth is just singing and vibrating like crazy right now, and it's changed. The pitch and the tone, everything has completely changed from not too long ago, and it keeps changing. So obviously, you know, there is some kind of a resonant frequency and tone that's being altered as we go through this evolutionary process, you know, in alignment with galactic core and with the sun's activity and everything else. I'll send you a copy of that and you can listen to it, but it might somehow tie into the work you're doing.
That'll be absolutely awesome. I'd love to get into that in much more greater detail. That'd be awesome. Thanks, James.
I love just listening to it. We have a file of it, and I put it on and just listen to it, and it just kind of gives me chills when I hear it.
Well, that's interesting that you bring that up. There's just so much to discuss in this area of sound and sound frequency as a source of energy and source of as a primordial source of all things in the universe as well, because most of the major religions suggest that that's how the universe was created, right? Out of the primordial sound of the divine being or the divine creator. And that's interesting in itself. What kind of sound was it? What was the source of the sound? And that's an amazing question.
Here I've got the, let me see if I can, I've got it on here. See if I can play it for you so you can hear it real quick. I don't know if you can hear that over the air.
Yeah, I can hear that.
It's a little bizarre, huh?
That's absolutely astonishing.
You know, I was wondering if that tone, and you have those stones, you know, the ringing stones, I was wondering if that sounds anything similar to that.
Well, I was just listening to it and thinking, it reminded me of two things immediately. It reminded me of whales and dolphins and some of the, you know, our friends in the ocean.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And secondly, it did remind me of some of the strange frequencies that come out of the stones when I ring them. But if this frequency that they recorded is coming out of the sort of center of the earth and the deep, I don't know, the deep consciousness of the planet in some way, which I have some interesting ideas and theories on that I'd like to, you know, share with you as well. If that's the case, then that those frequencies will be embedded in the rock, in the stones that I call that ring like bells, the stones that ring like bells, because they come out of volcanic rock, right?
Oh yeah.
So those frequencies would have been embedded and then solidified in the rock, in the stone, as it came out of the earth. So they'll definitely emulate those kind of sounds, not in a continuum or a continuous sound, but when you strike it, those will be some of the frequencies embedded in those, in that rock.
Yeah, I wonder if you could figure out a scale that would align with that new science you're talking about, kind of a musical scale, and then try to find the places on the stone that fit in with that scale and play that and see what happens.
Yeah, it's this thing gets more and more, it gets more and more complex, but and yet more and more simple at the same time, because you realize the simplicity. And I mentioned Paul Dirac earlier, the Nobel Prize winner, right? And shortly after he won the Nobel Prize, he started withdrawing from mainstream science and physics and so forth. And he made some interesting statements, and one of these statements he made, which makes me understand or believe that he knew a lot more, but he was too scared to share that publicly, because he saw the way that much of his other work was being treated. Uh-huh. And he made a statement that the laws of nature are extremely simple, and the formulas that describe these laws should be equally simple and beautiful. He said the laws of nature are simple and beautiful, and the formulas that we come up with to describe them should be equally simple and beautiful. Mm-hmm. That certainly is not the case with current physics and science, that they were just overcomplicated and overanalyzed. And I don't know if you've seen some of the formulas they try to come up with, trying to describe the strong force in the nucleus of an atom, and that, and uh-huh. You just look at some of these formulas and you really start to think, okay, you guys are on some weird drugs, man, that you just, it's like, what are you guys coming up with?
Uh-huh. Yeah, it does. What I found out in a lot of the, even the spiritual practices, is less is more. And the more you can boil these down to simplicity, the more powerful they are. And the more, and that over the years that people have grabbed them, you know, the intellectuals have grabbed them and added to them and altered them, and it's all to trap you in the intellect, when the real knowledge comes from the heart connection, and through the heart is the connector to the higher realms, where all the really the real knowledge is, the ancient wisdom is. But I've seen that over and over again, academia and those who are trapped in the intellect, who think it's the end all and should be in charge of everything, are dealing with, you know, again, less than 1% of the universe. And so why do we give our power away to these programs?
Yeah. Well, one of the things we did at the Stone Ruins is we recorded the stones, the sound frequencies, and a friend of mine's got a music studio, analyzed it, and wrote down the frequencies. And just a simple recording with a voice recorder gave us frequencies between 200 hertz and 16,500 hertz, which is almost the audible scale of the human ear. You know, we can hear down to about 50 hertz. Some people can hear down to 30 hertz. Those are the subwoofer kind of the speakers that give you the subwoofer effect down in those ranges. But the higher, you know, 16,500 hertz is already beyond some people's ability to hear. And these are just the simple recordings that we did of some of the stones, just by hitting them with another stone and getting the different tones at which they ring. Mm-hmm. But the important thing that came out of it is that they don't only ring at one frequency. They ring with multiple frequencies. So what we've got going on here is, like, imagine a piano with, the average piano has got about 72 strings, right, for the 7 octaves that it's got, or 10 octaves that it's got, or whatever. And if you imagine a string on a piano, if you hit it and it didn't just play C or didn't just play A, vibrate at the frequency of A, and it actually played more than one sound, that's what's happening with these stones. But it only plays one sound. So when you activate that sound, it doesn't play all the sounds at the same time. Mm-hmm. So what you've got here is multi-purpose ringing stones. So imagine if you got a stone circular wall with 20,000 stones in it, as opposed to 72 strings on a piano, mm-hmm. and you create a vibration in the middle of the circle of the stone circle, of a specific frequency. All those stones have it in them to ring at that specific frequency. Mm-hmm. And not just a few of those stones. This is the spectacular thing, because in the beginning I thought, well, they ring at different frequencies, so only some of the stones in the wall will ring and create a standing wave going around and around. But that's not the case. It's actually far more complex and dense. It's probable that all the stones in that wall, all the strings, if each stone is regarded as a string, and you activate those through by generating a frequency in the middle of the circle and let it start to vibrate the stones in the wall, as they start to vibrate and to ring, they all start to vibrate together. And that's a spectacularly powerful source of energy when you've got this sound being generated by 20,000 stones in a circular wall, mm-hmm. creating a standing wave going around and round. And once you've got this going, it's almost impossible to stop it, especially if it gets fed by some extrinsic energetic source. Mm-hmm. And we now know that extrinsic energetic source is that sound frequency that comes out of planet Earth. You just played that sound.
Yeah.
So once you get these stone walls going and these energy devices, because that's ultimately what they are, you can't stop it until you consciously stop it by interjecting a interfering frequency or interference frequency or vibration. Then you'll stop it, and then you can restart it again with a different tone or a different frequency that has a different application, a different effect, a different use, mm-hmm. and so forth. And imagine if you've got, you know, 100 of those circles in close proximity, and each one gets started to vibrate at a specific frequency, and they're vibrating together, making these incredibly loud sound vortexes that they basically shoot up into the sky, because the source frequency comes out of the surface of the Earth. It activates the standing, the stone circle, and it creates the sound frequency that then travels up into the sky like a beam of sound. Mm-hmm. So now you get a whole bunch of these standing next to each other, creating these different sounds together, and each sound individually has a specific application and a use, and collectively they have a different application and a use. And so you've just created an insatiable, inexhaustible source of energy that can be used for all kinds of things.
You know, they had, have you looked into Dr. Sam over there's work on the Bosnian pyramids?
I've seen some of his work, yeah.
Yeah, I had him on the show a while back, and he brought some top scientists out to measure what was going on with that pyramid. And he said that inside the pyramid, he said there are no negative frequencies whatsoever. It's totally a regenerating field. He said it's amazing. And outside, it generates this field that makes everything grow prolifically around the pyramid. And then at the top of the pyramid, they measured this frequency coming out of the earth, out of the pyramid, which actually got stronger the higher it went. It was like a building wave that got stronger and stronger and stronger as it went up. And it was like it would connect into some other force that would keep it going. You know, I don't know the details of it, but boy, he would be a good one to connect with and to ask him about the frequencies they're measuring off that pyramid, because it's all still intact. You know, it hasn't been torn apart or you know, dismantled and turned into other buildings and things like that, like some of the old pyramids.
And is this the Bosnian pyramid, James?
Yes, yeah, it's one, and those pyramids are older and bigger than the Egyptian pyramids. And he said he's receiving so much negativity about it. They're doing everything they can to stop the research there because, you know, there's a lot of money involved in tourism and everything else, and they don't want it out that there's even a bigger pyramid that is pretty much untouched, that they're excavating it right now.
Well, this is interesting, and I'll be talking in much more detail about this at your ranch at the SETI event. Mm-hmm. What's the date again?
It's June 24th.
June 24th. So for those people listening, if you're tickled by this information, I'll be sharing a lot more information about the measurements of electromagnetic waves, sound frequencies, heat signatures, and all that kind of stuff from the stone circles and Adam's calendar, Enki's calendar in South Africa, that will concur and confirm what you just told me about Sam. I forget his surname, the Bosnian pyramid man.
Yeah, I always mispronounce it, so I don't even want to try. But,
yeah.
Everybody calls him Dr. Sam, but I think it's Manovovic or something like that, or Mananovic or something, but I'm sure I'm butchering it. I have a copy. I can send you the recording of the show. I'll see if I can send you that file. And you can listen to it. And he actually gives a lot of details about the frequencies coming off the top and the scientists who are involved in that.
That's fantastic. I would really love to make contact with him because I think it sounds to me like his research and my research are running on parallel lines here at the moment.
Definitely. You know, and I guess when you put it, I'm sure you'll both have some valuable information for each other.
Yeah.
To expand your research.
That's awesome. I also would like to invite him to come and be a speaker at next year's Megalithomania in Johannesburg.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, we'll put him in contact with you and set that up and have him call you or whatever, or give you the contact information.
Fantastic. So, it's interesting you told me about the measurements that they did on the inside, that they know negative negative frequencies. That's a very important bit of information that he's discovered there, because that's exactly what we are finding with the secret numbers of God, what Willem de Swart calls no negative effect. Mm-hmm. That it's impossible to create negative energy if it's linked to the divine source or the unified source, as some scientists call it, the unified field or whatever. I think they get confused if they start using those kind of terms. But because out of source, there can be absolutely no negative frequencies. Everything is constantly in a state of creation. It only has creative. What's the right word I'm looking for? The creative forces encoded into it, and nothing negative out of it, nothing destructive. And that's really interesting, an interesting discovery.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, this is a whole nother topic, but it is interesting how some of the powers that be, whatever you want to say, are actually broadcasting so many other negative frequencies that are harmful, that are out of alignment with nature and spirit or God or whatever you want to create or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, that this new technology would be able to set us back on track, you know, in living with, in harmony with the rest of the universe and nature and everything else.
Yeah. Well, the frequencies that we've been measuring in these stone circles and at Adam's calendar, Enki's calendar are so mind-blowing and so confusing that it irrefutably and scientifically points to advanced knowledge that we just don't understand. Mm-hmm. And they go into extremely high frequency ranges in gigahertz that are higher frequencies that we use on Earth today. We don't even come close to using these kind of frequencies. And yet this is what we're measuring at some of these sites. Mm-hmm. And that tells us that whoever these people were, whether they were the Anunnaki or somebody else, but it seems to be the Anunnaki, Enki and his cronies, that they understood this extensively, and they used these frequencies for everything that they were doing, from levitation to separation, crushing of the ore and separating the minerals and transmutating them. And this is where it becomes interesting, because this is some of the most recent conclusions that I'm reaching because of the measurements, is that it is possible that they were actually transmutating them alchemically from gold into something else and then shooting it off into space to some other destination.
That's interesting. It does seem highly possible. I mean, you just watch one of the old Star Trek movies and they have those teleportation machines, and supposedly we have those as well, in our back engineered stuff. So I don't see why that wouldn't be a possibility. You know, there's one other thing I wanted to mention, is that we have some recordings of the ships, and it's quite interesting. And one recording, if you just play it on your laptop, you're not even going to hear it, because it's such a deep pulse. You need some real strong bass speakers. And it's of a mothership hovering over Portland State University. And we have another recording of one here when we were doing a healing for a man. Actually, he was with Above Top Secret that was here, and he actually experienced an incredible healing and actually recorded the sound of the ships, which was never mentioned, on that site. They sanitized the whole thing for some reason and forgot about it. But we have these recordings, and those recordings are Robbie Williams, a sound man, had it on his gear. He does all the sound for Robbie Williams, the famous pop star over there. And he was looking at it, he said, I have never heard any, I've heard every sound, I've eliminated sounds, I've done everything, I know how to break things down. But he said that you could hear this ringing, and it's ringing on top of ringing on top of ringing. And he said it's like a feedback loop or of different tones that are all building on each other. And he said he's never heard anything like it, and he doesn't even understand how this could have been made. So that might just very well be the propulsion unit on some of these ships, is that they use some type of tones or frequencies that just build on each other until they just move out of this dimension, you might say. They just move the frequencies of the ship higher and higher and higher and higher, and then pop, they're gone.
And it also is becoming more evident that it's the higher frequencies that that allow anti-gravity effects to occur. Mm-hmm. I don't know if your research is moving in that direction, but it definitely is the higher frequencies that allow that to happen. And
exactly. Well, the low tone, I asked what the low tone was about, and I went into meditation and got a telepathic message. And I asked them, I said, what are you doing over Portland State University at 3 o'clock in the morning? And they said, higher learning. And when they when they tried to break down this sound coming from the ship, they said there was a binary code inside the tones that were very deep tones, and I guess they were using that as a transmitter, as some kind of a transmitter. And what I found out is that the healing tones are very low; they're very bass. A lot of the lamas, you know, they have that deep guttural chanting and things like that, and those tones are extremely healing tones that were being broadcast as well as information.
Yeah, well, you know, I believe that the low tones are healing tones for various reasons. Mm-hmm. One of the most important reasons would be that it's at the low frequencies that our bodies can feel the vibrations. It's like at a rock concert when you stand in front of the PA system, it's the low frequencies that vibrate your body, that you can feel the air move, and you know, the headbangers stand in front of the speakers, and because they feel the effect of the sound waves through their bodies at those low frequencies from about 200 hertz and around there, 300 hertz down. And so your body feels it, and it's the frequencies that actually vibrate physically vibrate the organs in your body and your everything around in your physical being. Once they start vibrating physically, the harmonic resonant frequencies of those low frequencies have the same effect on in all directions, lower and higher frequencies, but it starts with a physical vibration of your body and the organs. And think about what I've just told you is We are looking for the frequencies that affect an organism. And at that frequency, you can then affect the organism positively or negatively once you know at which frequency it operates, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the ways of finding those frequencies is to go to the harmonic resonance of those frequencies in the lower hertz frequencies where your body physically feels it. But then automatically, as your body and every cell in your body responds to a variety of those low frequencies and vibrates with those low frequencies, the harmonic resonance of those frequencies gets multiplied in an infinite direction upwards and has that same effect on every part of your body.
Definitely.
I don't know if it's making sense what I'm saying.
No, it does. Yeah, definitely. It's amazing. I really think the new healing technologies are going to come all through frequency, through tones, and you know, especially the Rife technology is already here. People are using that, and you know, I was playing with some incredible magnetic resonators and things just this weekend, as far as healing, and I've always had this lower back problem that just doesn't go away, and I put this magnetic pulsar on my back, and I go, oh my God, I mean, the muscles started pulsing, the ones that were tight and wouldn't let go, and all of a sudden they just relaxed, and you know, I went out and I just worked all day long and came in and was fine. I was just blown away at how well that works, and you know, my next question is, why isn't everybody using it?
Yeah, that's just because people are stuck in the paradigm of, well, my doctor advised me not to use it because it hasn't been approved by the FDA.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, those guys are scary now, the FDA. You know, you don't want to drink raw milk right now because you'll have a SWAT team come down on you.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you would think, don't you have a little bit other things to do, you know, like something, you know, anything other than terrorizing poor farmers that are selling milk, you know, an age old thing that's been going on for millions of years.
The interesting thing about this is that it seems quite obvious now that the countries and the civilizations that will survive an apocalyptic event are the third world countries that are not so tightly controlled, mm-hmm. that already live close to the earth you know, people that live out in the rural areas, the farming areas, with their own cows and sheep and donkeys, and and they have horse carts, and they can get around and do things without worrying about electricity or outside intervention.
Yeah, no, pretty. You know, one day we might see these a brand new Ferrari being pulled by a horse, you know, going down the road because there is no gas, you know.
And it makes a really good chassis.
Yeah, exactly. But I wouldn't be surprised to see that. Have you done very much research into this comet Elenin coming in?
No, I haven't. You know, I read up a little bit about it. And what I read immediately made me go, okay, my immediate gut feel and response to it was it's not really of major significance to us right now. And that was my immediate gut feel and response, and I left it right there. So,
yeah, I've been looking more into it, and there's a lot of university professors that are giving information out. And some are actually saying it is Nibiru coming in and that it's much bigger than they're telling us. And I think that's interesting because one of the things that's happened is almost every major earthquake, the Japan one, the Chile one, and all these quakes are aligning with Elenin when Elenin aligns with the sun and the earth, right on the button. And so this guy has this big, long historical thing, the scientist, and he says, look at this alignment here. And he said that this is evidence, proof positive that this is perturbing the earth and creating a lot of, you know, volcanic and earthquake and severe weather and things of that nature. And also that alignment with galactic plane that's going on, or galactic core, is also, you know, NASA just released something that they said there's just these huge streams of energy coming in from galactic plane that are creating a lot of the weather anomalies and earthquake and volcanic stuff. So they're getting on to it. I think it's a multiple event that's happening. And, you know, you can't deny the fact that every time this thing creates an alignment between the Earth and Sun, we have a huge quake on the planet.
Yeah, that certainly is something to sit up and pay attention to, that's for sure.
And maybe that's Enki coming back, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, the one thing I always say to people right up front is that my mind is open to any new information, and I will readjust my current philosophy and belief based on the new information coming in. So the more information we get, and I personally get about Elenin, the quicker I can readjust my current belief system. But at this stage, I don't know enough about it, except that it's linked to these Earth disasters, whether that's because it's a giant planet, or whether it's a giant comet with a huge effective field around it, I don't know. But really, it's affecting us in some way. Is it Nibiru? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I always ask that question, you know, why is this having such a profound effect on the Earth if it's just a little comet?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It makes no sense whatsoever.
That certainly is a very important question that needs to be answered. That brings into question the other event in, I think it was in February 2005, where those two giant comets that came into our solar system that were the size of Jupiter.
Wow.
Do you recall that? Nassim Haramein
has
posted quite a bit of information about that. And they came in very close proximity to Venus and Earth. And specifically Mercury as well. And they should have destroyed Mercury and should have destroyed Venus and certainly should have had a huge effect on us, if not pretty much destroyed us or thrown us off our orbit around the sun. Uh-huh. And none of this had happened.
Yeah, maybe we got a little divine intervention. You know, I know NASA has photographs of these massive ships that are as big as the Earth, sitting next to the sun, and the sun will throw off a huge coronal mass ejection, and these ships expand their fields and actually block it. And that would be a kill shot, you know, for the people, whoever's facing the sun at the time, you know, like it happened in the past. But it's amazing, you know, we're not hearing any of this. Even I actually have the photographs that you know, have the NASA time stamp data, everything on it. But we never hear about these things happening.
No, of course not. No, this is the information that is. This is why when you start in getting involved in the field that we're involved in this area of research and spreading the consciousness and so forth, whatever you want to call it, this work that we're doing, you realize the absolute insanity of the global media and that it is just a continuous soap opera of disinformation.
Yeah, I was telling everybody right now, the Earth is looking to me like a really bad B movie. You
know? Yeah, it's just awful. It's a bad script. It's a well implemented script, but it's a bad script.
Yeah, you know, for those who are awake, it's so obvious. When you look at it, you go, oh my God, I can't believe people are falling for this again. You know, this is the 50th time they've pulled this program.
Yeah,
but people do. You know, it's amazing. They turn on their TV and pop their beer and wait for somebody to tell them, you know, how to live, how to think, and what's happening. You know, rather than doing their own research.
Yeah, there's a very interesting bit of information for those that haven't yet heard this about the 9/11 numbers that go hand in hand with 9/11, and it's now clear to me that for those people that have been following the whole conspiracies around the Illuminati and the royal political bloodlines and all that kind of stuff, it becomes very obvious that these are ritualistic creatures that for some obscure reason follow very strict and harshly enforced rituals and sacrifice and et cetera, for thousands of years.
Oh, yeah. And you know, it's all about, you know, getting the consciousness focused on them so they can utilize that energy versus, you know, getting people to wake up and get involved in their own creative endeavors.
So the whole 9/11 story, now when you look at some of the numbers, it became very clear to me that we're dealing with a ritualistic attack on the divine powers of planet Earth, the female goddess divine energy forces and the energy fields and the primordial powers on this Earth. And it's spectacular when you start seeing these kind of things come out because of the Twin Towers in New York, and it was an attack on the pyramidal power of the Great Pyramid. The original power of the Great Pyramid, which encompassed all these female forces of creative forces on planet Earth. Mm-hmm. And this is really interesting because the whole 9/11, the Great Pyramid seems to be built in 220 layers, divided into two sections. So it's 110 each, and the Twin Towers are 110 stories each, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can also see them as the two ones of the Fibonacci sequence, the source of all creation that rolls out in the golden spiral from the two ones, the 11, which is also the number for Earth, Gaia, which is a Greek word for 11. So you start seeing that 11 and the Twin Towers is synchronous with the divine feminine Earth fields and power, and linked to the Fibonacci sequence and the golden mean spirals and so forth. And then the Pentagon was obviously 5 as the divine number, and the Pentagon was structured. So the attack on the two towers and the Pentagon was an attack on the Great Pyramid and its original source of energy on Earth. And if you look at the numbers, Washington is 9 degrees above the Great Pyramid. New York is 11 degrees above the Great Pyramid. The Great Pyramid is sitting on 31 degrees east longitudinal line, which is the feminine female power number, mm-hmm. the goddess number in the sacred numbers of God. And then finally, the total number of people killed. Go to the website, 9/11/2997, right? Mm-hmm. 2,997 people killed, apparently, right? Oh, is it coincidental? That's just exactly the longitude at which the Great Pyramid sits above the equator, 29.97 degrees above the equator. And you realize that all the numbers of a sacrificial onslaught and a ritual are encoded in the whole 9/11 event linked to the Great Pyramid.
Yeah, it's amazing when you get you get this information, you look at all the symbolism and the dates that they have their rituals and everything else, it all ties together, and it's, and for those who have the knowledge or the wisdom, it all, you can almost plan out what they're going to do next. You know, you can see
absolutely
when the next event. You know, unfortunately, we're out of time. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, and I can't wait to see you here June 24th at the event. And you know, keep up the awesome work, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, James. Love to see you again. Look forward to it. Thanks for chatting, and have a good time until we see you.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. This is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great evening, and boy, there's just so much going on. Time to start paying attention, watch the skies, focus on your heart, and you know, feel these new energies coming in, because we're just a heartbeat away from a major quantum leap in evolution. Anyway, have a great evening. Good night.